ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Okay, now the Lord continues. He speaks one more verse and then Brahma has a few things to say. No, there's a little Brahma who goes through. Sutta, Sukadeva goes on. This is really the end of it. Okay. Etam matam samastita paramena samadhi bhavikalpa vikalpeshu na vimukyatikarachit. Just follow this conclusion: by fixed concentration of mind and no pride will disturb you, neither in the partial nor in the final devastation. This is here. One interesting thing, the word matam, this conclusion. I like this translation of matam better. Somewhere, Krishna says, iti matam in the Bhagavad Gita, and Prabhupada translates, this is my opinion. So when you give class, somebody says, well, it's just his opinion. Really, you know, it's like, well, it's God's opinion. It's not just like one of mine. So, It means the settled conclusion of his mind. This is matam. This is this conclusion. By remain fixed in this, paramena samadhina, by supreme fixed concentration of the mind, and that no pride will disturb you. You remember. Navi Mukhyati, you will never be bewildered. Anyway, you'll never be bewildered. He had asked about not becoming, have his consciousness compromised by pride. So, this is the import of this. Navi Mukhyati, you will never be bewildered. Means by pride. He was worried about this. We discussed how sometimes Brahma gets a slight idea of oneness with the Supreme in the wrong way, or thinks himself better than Lord Shiva, and then because of that, even though he goes up to Mahavishnu, he comes back down again. He keeps on but he's worried about that. So here, Prabhupada points out the parallels. The Bhagavad Gita has been summarized in four verses. And that's in chapter 8, 9, 10, 11. So the complete Srimad Bhagavatam has been summarized in four verses. And he says, thus the secret purpose of the most important Bhagavatite conclusion. It's a word, you can do that. has been explained by the original speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, who was also the original speaker of the Bhagavad Gita. So therefore, the idea that this conclusion is it's very authoritative. And Krishna has told the whole secret purpose, especially the secret purpose meaning the last verse, what you should be doing. And now, how not to be what is the deviation from this conclusion? Prabhupada talks about advises Brahman not to be deviated from the fixed conclusion that the Lord has taught him. By whom? By grammarians and non-devotees. By grammarians. I think he means what do they say, Yachara? I mean, it means Mayavadis, I'm pretty sure. But people who try to read the words in different ways like that. But because Mahaprabhu was a grammarian before he became, that was his specialty, Vyakarana. He was a teacher of grammar. Huh?
He taught Kalapa Vyakarana.
Hmm?
He taught Kalapa Vyakarana to a particular school.
That particular school of grammar. So there are grammarians. I don't know if he means grammarians in a strict sense.
It may, it may be a reference to Bhopadev, his Advaita Nimrata commentary,
yeah,
who is most known for his Mudda Bodha, which is a textbook on grammar.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah. And then Prabhupada refers to these four verses as the nucleus. So nutshell, now another term, nucleus. The Bhagavatam, nice another term. And then he talks about the misinterpretations of the word aham. He refers to those again. Srimad Bhagavatam is the text of the personality of Godhead and his unalloyed devotees, referring to this word Bhagavata, who are known as the Bhagavatas, and any outsider should have no access to this confidential literature of devotional service. Now he mentions the person and persons themselves by his poor fund of knowledge in grammar and dry speculation. Therefore, the Lord warns Brahma, and through Brahma, all future devotees of the Lord in the disciplic succession of Brahma, that one should not be misled by the conclusion of the so-called grammarians, or by other men with a poor fund of knowledge, but must always fix the mind properly via the parampara system. So, although in the text, this Mukhyati, he's bewildered, Prabhupada in the text translates it as referring to pride. Here, he kind of bewildered by Mayavadi conclusion, which is also a kind of pride, seeking the one with God, but not to be for us as following in the disciplic succession. Whatever he says to Brahma applies to everyone else in the disciplic succession. So watch out for that kind of stuff. And so fixed in mind properly, what does it mean? The parampara system. It's the same thing we say about the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna is there. How did Arjuna accept it? What was his response? So similarly, here's Krishna, here's Brahma. How does he receive it? What is his understanding? And that's given to us as we show in the parampara system. And so therefore, again, he says that the first step is to find such a representative in this parampara. And not try to squeeze something out or juggle words. This is describing now the bona fide spiritual master, not squeeze out his own meaning by imperfect mundane knowledge, is competent to teach the disciple of the right path with reference to the context of all authentic Vedic literature. He does not attempt to juggle words to bewilder the student. So that's the teaching is faithful in this way, and moreover, the bona fide spiritual master by his personal activities teaches the disciple the principles of devotional service. Without personal service, one would go on speculating like the impersonalists and dry speculators, life after life, and would be unable to reach the final conclusion by following the instructions of the bona fide spiritual master in conjunction with the principles of revealed scripture, the student will rise to the plane of complete knowledge, which will be exhibited by development of detachment from the world of sense gratification. The Prabhupada keeps emphasizing this point that when one has got real knowledge, it's not just that you can claim it or say, I have it, or that like you've memorized answers for an exam, like you do in a university, you pass the exam. This will be seen by some transformation of personal behavior. And that's, he said, detachment. Jnana, vairagya. Remember we talked about that there? So here it is again, knowledge followed by detachment. The mundane wranglers are surprised that one can detach himself from the world of sense gratification. And thus, any attempt to be fixed in God realization appears to them to be mysticism. Meaning here some vague, unreal or something. So he describes this now as the Brahma-Bhuta stage, also known as Atmarama. Does not hanker for the world. It's not just this sense enjoyment. Notice he uses this term, world of sense gratification twice, world of sense enjoyment, the whole package. Not just this thing or that thing, but the whole realm of Maya where sense gratification takes place. And many quotes here from what you already studied, 1-20. Thus being satisfied in mind by the practice of bhakti yoga, Bhagavad Tattva Vijnana, there is realized knowledge of the truth of the Lord and Mukta Sangasya, liberation from Sangha here means material association. When Sangha is by itself, it often refers to this material association. You could understand the science of God in the liberated stage. One by practice comes to the mode of goodness. We'll discuss this a little more. And then from that material mode of goodness, one can begin to understand, and by making further advancement, we come to the liberated stage where then everything becomes clear. You can see how people in the world of sense gratification, they cannot see or cannot have, they have lost their senses that can perceive the divine. Originally our senses are meant for that. Those senses are now shut down. They cannot perceive either themselves or the Lord or really the world as it is. So therefore they say, doesn't exist. We can't see it. It's not there. Show me God. Where is he? Not there. Therefore, what is this life for? Well, we drink and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Seize the day. Carpe diem. And then you engage in more sense gratification, which makes you more unable to have spiritual experience. And so the idea that there is no God, followed by the practices of more sense gratification as your activity of life, it becomes a self-fulfilling statement, because people become less and less able to have anything like spiritual experience. And so words like God and the soul just become, they have no idea. How many times when you go to university and lectures and you talk about the soul, people just have a totally blank idea. Oh, something out there, something that we can't experience. So I start with that and say, not only do we experience the soul is the very condition of our having any experiences whatsoever. Because you do experience the soul when you experience anything. Because the symptom of the presence of the soul is consciousness. So then you can start to talk to these people. Then I say, most of you are conscious. Except the guy sleeping in the bed. Anyway, you get the idea. But people, they just have no... These are just words from some cloudy mysticism in the past or something. Mm-hmm. There's no relation to experience, yeah.
Does that mean that for us, everything up to the stage of the Brahma-Buddha platform is a kind of struggle? Because we can't really see what's going on and what we're hearing, and we're trying to follow, but we don't have the...
You will get, if one practices with some diligence, things will start to happen. Even in the very beginning, one has some realized knowledge. Usually when we get involved in Krishna consciousness, the first realized knowledge we get or already have is that there's no happiness in the material world. That sense gratification it does not lead to happiness but to misery. You may not be able to speak about anything with a real lot of conviction, but of that you know. So if you just perceive a little bit, you'll become more and more clear about that. And what will happen is that when there's good practice of Krishna consciousness, things will start to make sense. In other words, when we read these books, we are finding out information that looks very relevant and important for us. And we become interested to learn it and to understand it. We should see that because the modes of passion and ignorance should be decreasing to some measure, and to the extent that they're decreasing, we'll be able to have more and more realized knowledge. We're in contact with the Holy Name. If we're just practicing and trying to chant while becoming free from offenses, we'll start to have some actual experiences. And Prabhupada said, for example, he wrote it to Kenneth Keating, a senator who after he retired, became ambassador for India, was asking Keating for some support. And Prabhupada wrote to him, "I have taken hippies and turned them into happies." But he it was more than just a clever phrase. I have taken people who are in the mode of ignorance. If you see Prabhupada's description of hippies, I once had an occasion to look up what he said about them. It's all dirty, unemployed, lying in the streets, drug intoxicated, you know, all the way down the line. Description of the mode of ignorance. So I have taken hippies and turned them into happies. Now they have bright faces and so on. Probably you could look and see how people would change, that you could see something was happening. So there's some realization from the very beginning, and then you become more advanced, it becomes more and more possible. The Prabhupada says, in this stage of full satisfaction, as prasanna manasaha, satisfied in mind, and detachment from worldly sense gratification, detachment from the sensory world, one can know the mystery of the science of God with all its confidential intricacies, not by grammar or academic speculation. So Brahma was qualified in this way, and so therefore the Lord revealed it to him. And again, now he repeats from one of the chapters, Shloki Bhagavad Gita, To those, tesham satate yuktaram, rajatam kati purvakam. To those who are always united with me in loving devotional service, dadami, I give them, buddhi yogam, the intelligence, yinamamupayatate, by which they come to me. And Prabhupada says this, that the Lord, out of his causeless mercy upon the devotee, gives direct instructions. So this actually should happen if one becomes steady in Krishna consciousness. One should receive direct instructions so that the devotee may make accurate progress on the path returning home back to Godhead. Now, what is this like? First of all, one has to be endeavoring very sincerely and showing Krishna you're really interested. You're not leading some kind of double life. And really having a real desire to know, what do I need to do to advance in Krishna consciousness? What's the next thing I have to do? What should I be doing? It's like a question. That question is in your mind. You're really concerned with this. Just like, say, a businessman. You know, he wakes up in the morning. What do I have to do next to make more money? And he thinks about that all day long. What he has to do to increase his profit, cut his expenses. This day, goes to bed, you think, right? And then somebody's giving some seminar and something about how it can help this. They run and they pay thousands of dollars to hear this seminar, you know, because they're eager to learn how I can make more money. Well, a devotee, if he's like that, about Krishna consciousness, then Krishna lets us know. But sometimes, you know, you just have to be sitting around and you're thinking about what I should do or what. You open a book and suddenly there's a sentence. And then you overhear somebody saying something else and he says the same thing. Or you happen to catch something in class, it sounds like he's talking to me, you know. Things like that happen all the time. And so therefore you have an indication what I should be doing. And then even more, Krishna may, you know, talk to you in dreams and so on. So not mental speculation, rather by direct perception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is able to know all about his abode, Vaikuntha, as was seen and experienced by Brahmaji. Such Vaikuntha revelation is possible by any devotee of the Lord situated in the transcendental position as the result of devotional service. This is Vijnanam, it's science, and one practices devotional service correctly, this will come about. Now it's interesting, while talking about this, Prabhupada talks about this Vaikuntha realization, he refers actually, then he says the Lord appeared, it is said, Gopavesha me purusha purusta. The Lord appeared at Gopavesha, clothed as a cow herd boy. Gopa means cow protector. As Govinda, who is later described, he sets this at a later time than this one, by Brahmaji in his Brahma Samhita.
In this conversation, Krishna was a
cowherd? No, he's referring to Gopavesha. The Lord appeared as a cowboy. Here he says cowboy. He doesn't usually do that because of, you know, people who've seen too many westerns. But that's actually cowboy is, you know, what he is. That is the original personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna Govinda, who is later described by Brahma. Doesn't say, he said later described by Brahma as, so he's referring to this as the, in the Gopavesh.
And he appeared some other time in the Gopavesh.
Yeah, apparently. He just says he's described later. One assumes that it means he also appeared later in another day of Brahma or another, you know, something.
The promising hit a press we don't actually know where they were composed or spoken. What was the setting? Like, for example, in the previous chapter we've seen the Vaikuntha Darshan, and here Lord Brahma is, you know, seen on top of the lotus flower.
Yeah, there too also is described in the Brahma Samhita how he's sitting on the lotus and looking around, and then also receives, there it describes how he receives the 18 syllable mantra, and then by dint of that is able to see to see Goloka Vrindavan, and then he describes it.
And this is it?
Yeah. That's in the Brahma Samhita. The Brahma Samhita was found by Mahaprabhu in South India. We always say fifth chapter, but the other chapters, nobody's seen them. And I assume that Mahaprabhu is the only source of this. I don't know if anyone else has any other source of it. Yeah.
Does Lord Krishna reveal Brahma's
at a certain
point? Huh? Does Lord Krishna reveal Brahma's entity within Goloka Vrindavan to him at some point?
Well, it doesn't say so in the Brahma Samhita, as I recall. So there may be more information about there somewhere, but it's not in the Brahma Samhita. It's not in the Bhagavatam.
There's a part of the Vedic literature called Sanghitas.
Sanghita, yeah.
And the Brahma Samhita is not part of that. Why is it called Sanghita?
I don't know.
Oh, Sanghita is just a compilation.
Yeah, it's a collection.
Yeah.
That's what it means.
And actually, some of the Sanghitas are an uncommon term, part of the title for a bunch of things.
But there's usually a list of major samhitas, right? That's what you're referring to.
Well, you mean the Vedic samhitas?
Yeah. You mean within the Vedas?
Yes.
Oh, those. Yeah, that's different. That's in the original four Vedas. This is a Sriti.
The word samhita is more or less equivalent to the English word book. And so it's not uncommon.
Therefore, Lord Sri Krishna is the original form of the Supreme Lord. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam, which you've already studied, the Paribhasa Sutra of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which you studied in the Paribhasa Sutra. Jesus' statement. This is also clear from this instruction. I assume he's referring to the Brahma Samhita and not this particular
verse.
Oh, this instruction in Rishnas Tu Bhagavan Swayam, he's referring to that verse, okay. Yeah, that's what he's referring to. Okay. And again, he calls Srimad Bhagavatam the sound representation of the Lord. Conclusion that Bhagavatam is the science of the Lord, in which the Lord and his abode are perfectly realized. This is the last thing that he says. Krishna says to Brahma, at the point of that,
heartbreakingly brief.
Well, there may have been further discussion. No, I don't think so. I think that's it. Because he says here now, now we're back to Sukadeva Goswami, talking to Maharaj Krishna. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, after being seen in his transcendental form, instructing Brahmaji, the leader of the living entities, disappeared. That was it. A short conversation. It's an interesting little sort of wordplay here between Ajanaha and Jananam. I'm not quite sure what the import of it is. He is Ajanaha. How is Ajanaha the Supreme Person?
He's not a person.
He's not a person?
He's not. Bhakti Siddhanta Gloss is just Lokatita. He's
okay.
Beyond the world.
Okay. Because Jana is a person of this world. He's Ajana of all the Jananam.
Because Jana comes from the word Jan to take birth.
Who has taken birth, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's just another form of Ajana.
Uh-huh. But Ajana also means something else according to the dictionary. I forgot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has another meaning. All living entities are individual persons. So he quotes the Nityo Nityanam. Then he says, wherever there is chetana or knowledge, the personal feature comes in. In this, huh?
Ajna is from Aj, the instigator.
The instigator, yeah, that's right. Interesting. So I think that's
from Aj to throw the propel fast.
The instigator. But there says it refers to Brahma.
Right.
In the dictionary. The dictionary is not very good sometimes. Wherever there is chetana or knowledge, the personal feature comes in. In the spiritual world, everything is full of knowledge. And therefore, everything in the transcendental world, the land, the water, the tree, the mountain, the river, the man, the animal, the bird, everything is of the same quality, namely chetana. And therefore, everything there is individual and personal. In the Briya Bhagavatamrita, there's quite a discussion on this about Vaikuntha Loka, where everyone there is a devotee, and therefore, in order to serve the Lord, they take all kinds of different forms. Although they're naturally in four-handed forms, they change their forms to make a nice scenic world for everybody. So spend time with various aspects of the environment.
It says here that this personal feature comes in when there's knowledge. It says here the personal feature comes in when there is knowledge. So often you hear that people who realize the impersonal Brahman, they realize the sat and chit feature, but they don't realize the ananda.
No, we don't say chit, we just say sat. How can there be how can you call it knowledge? Where the knower, the known, and the act of knowing all disappear. Why the hell that's called knowledge and they're called gyanis? I have no idea. That's like one of these propaganda coups, you know? Like when you're about to withdraw all the money from the Environmental Preservation Act, you call it the Forest Rescuing Act or something. It gives you the opposite thing. It's just so weird. It's not, knowledge means there's a knower. And how even by the remotest stretch you can call it knowledge when the knower disappears.
So we just say that they realize one feature of the absolute truth, Sat.
Yeah, we just say Sat. Chit means the Paramatma. Sat Chit, and then Ananda means all three. Yeah, we just say the Sat feature. We don't credit them with knowledge. As the Isha Upanishad calls that a darker region of ignorance. So then Srimad Bhagavatam gives us this information as the supreme Vedic literature, and it was personally instructed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Jiva Brahma, so that the leader of all living entities might broadcast this message to all the universe. So here Prabhupada goes back to this story, Brahma especially is enlightened, with the expectation that given his position, you'll pass it on. And so here we have another recitation of the Parampara. Narad, Vyas, Vyas to Shukadev, Shukadev. Through Shukadev's grace and mercy of Maharaj Prisha, we are all given the Srimad Bhagavatam perpetually. To learn the science of the Absolute Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. Now that's the purport of that text. Now this is interesting, where on the disappearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, Antarhita, he went inside or something. Who is the object of transcendental enjoyment for the senses of devotees, Brahma, with folded hands, began to recreate the universe, full with all living entities, as it was previously, Purvavat, like before. So here, the Lord is called a sense object. Upon the disappearance, well, Brahma is seeing him, so he's an object of his vision. So the word Indriya Artha means sense object. Generally, it's used in the Bhagavad Gita, meaning objects of the material senses. But here, this is kind of using this in this interesting way to see that the Lord was an object of Brahma's spiritualized senses. And Prabhupada generalizes here, the object of transcendental enjoyment for the senses of the devotees. See, artha means just a subject, an object, you know, something you're thinking, looking at or reading or so on as your artha. And then the indriya is the senses. So the Lord disappears. And the Brahma who has Anjali. Prabhupada always calls this folded hands, which you think of this, but Anjali is this. So you're a little separated as though you're going to, and generally this. In the olden times, everybody would go like this, right? Like you're receiving the mercy on your head. This is called Anjali. Pitanjali, like this with palms together. So then he created this universe again. Yeah?
This is just a strange question. Is it happening to Brahman every day, or just once after his birth? he's the tapas staff and everything. Or every night, every morning he wakes up.
Wakes up and has to do it.
Amazing.
I'm actually not. I assumed at first, but that this happens at the beginning of his life. But if there's other, because you know the, when he goes to sleep, everything isn't. He goes back into the body of or back into the lotus anyway. But actually, everything is not the devastation during his night is not total. So I'm not really clear about that. What actually happens? I tried to figure it out once in the third canto, and I didn't. Do you know anything about this?
Something,
yeah. Yeah, I do too. I just sort of had contradictory, you know. I'm not quite sure if it's the same, if the first time is different from the other times. But when he wakes up, he has to recreate this to some extent. It's like, you know, when you wake up from sleep, you have to remember who you are and, you know, this stuff. Restructure your life again. Now, as far as the Lord is the object of the senses, here's this nice verse from the Hari Bhakti Suddhodaya. Where the senses are listed, optional, the two eyes, the sense of touch, the tongue, and the palam, the fulfillment or the fruit of those, is to see the Lord, and to touch the sangha, to touch the limbs of the Lord. Gatra is his limbs, sangha, to touch his limbs, and for the tongue, to glorify him.
Is the Lord they're speaking of, or the devotee?
This is what the devotee does. The purpose of the devotee's eyes, his sense of touch, to touch your body, and the tongue to glorifying the Lord.
Oh,
and then
it's like
the tongue is meant for glorifying. Yeah, the devotee's tongue is meant for glorifying. Right?
Isn't it to glorify the devotee? Or devotee of the Lord?
Huh?
The purpose of visual senses for whom has seen you, the devotee. What is it? It's from the translation.
Oh, because it seems to address the devotee of the Lord?
Yeah, like prayer to the devotee.
It seems like, at least from the translation.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
It seems like he's talking about the devotee.
About the devotee, being seen by. But yeah, the purpose of the visual sense is by seeing a devotee.
Right.
Sudurlabha bhagavata hi loke. Because a devotee is very rare in this world. Excuse me. But same thing. The fulfillment of the senses in spiritual engagement. It's true. It's not about the Lord, but it's addressed to the devotee. That's true.
How much more so of the Lord himself?
Yeah, right. The living entity is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari is the object for fulfilling the senses of all living entities. It is the proper object. Illusion by the glaring reflection of the external energy. The living entity worships the senses instead of engaging them properly in fulfilling the desires of the Supreme. But then Prabhupada says, originally, in the spiritual existence, the senses of the living entity were awarded. There's the word awarded. is like a gift. Huh? You're gifted with senses, namely to engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, or that of his devotees. But instead one becomes, as he says, captivated by sense enjoyment. Therefore, the whole process of God consciousness is meant to rectify the conditional activities of the senses and not engage them, but re-engage them in the direct service of the Lord. So Lord Rama's engagement is to recreate, you have to put a hyphen there because otherwise it's recreate. Recreation is recreate the conditioned living entity to act in the recreated universe. So Brahma does this for the same purpose, to give them a way to come back home, and servants of the Lord like Brahmaji, Naradi, Vyasaji and their company become busy with the same person. For the purpose of the Lord, to reclaim the conditioned souls from the field of sense gratification and return them to the normal stage. So what is normal? This is the normal stage of engaging the senses in the service of the Lord.
And this definitely speaks to a purposeful universe.
Yeah, definitely it's purposeful. It's every purpose. If you understand the creation, how it works, that you know, this the first thing that appears in Mahatattva is false ego. Whose false ego? It's a collective element for the living entity. There's no false ego unless there's living entities. And that so that kind of collective false ego appears first. And then that false ego is divided, the time factor appears, and false ego is divided into false ego in goodness, passion, and ignorance. And then everything, the senses, the sense object, the mahāyānas, all come out of the controlling system, the devas, all come out of the false ego in these three modes. So ahankara is like the foundation, and there's no ahankara unless there are living entities to have it. So the whole thing is made for the living entities. They're not a late, you know, they're not a late afterthought. This is sometimes, you know, this theory of evolution. No, it's, they're right, there's for them in the beginning. Because they, when the Lord glances at the universe, he impregnates the material energy with the living entities. So they're sort of in there, in the Mahatattva somehow or other, and then, you know, everything is formed up. And they get their different bodies. The whole construction is there. It's for them, right from the very beginning. It has a final cause. And Aristotle says he describes four causes. Like when there's a pot is being made, right? There's the material cause, the clay. The efficient cause, the potter. What he calls the formal cause, which is kind of the plan or the idea of the pot. And the final cause, carrying water. What's it for? So Krishna, from we're concerned, Krishna provides the material, the efficient, the formal, and the final cause. All of those are there, coming from Krishna. The whole thing, it's very hard to talk about biology when you talk about eyes. Well, they have a purpose to see with, you know. So the biologists go through this whole thing to get rid of any idea of purpose or final causes, what they call teleology. Do you know this word, teleology? This is a good word to know. You can. It's a nice word. I will get it up here in this Oxford English Dictionary in a minute. Uh, teleology, from the Greek word telos, meaning end, end. The doctrine or study of ends or final causes, especially as related to the evidences of design or purpose in nature. Also, such design as exhibited in natural objects or phenomena. So here's some critic of Darwin back in 1893, the last ethics. Darwin has not written a chapter that is not full of teleology. But now they're really trying to get purposes out of there in biology. It's a whole issue. I took a course in philosophy of science, and it was a whole chapter about getting biology free from any idea of teleology. You talk like that, but you don't talk about purposes or ends or what it's for and so on. Because once you have a design or a purpose, and you say, who did purpose with you, and so forth. So it's for the living entities. So then Prabhupada wants to say that the impersonalists, they are people who see that their senses cause them trouble. The activities of the senses are the cause of bondage. And so somehow or other, they want to become free from these senses, to nullify them, or to hold them in abeyance, to reject them, to deprive them of objects. Shankaracharya says, in his Bhagavad Gita Bhashya, he says that avidya and kama are the root of all action. Ignorance and lust. There's no action without ignorance and lust. If avidya and kama go away, nothing happens. They want to deny action, they want to deny the senses, because they see they're the cause of bondage. So that's why Prabhupada says they want to make the conditioned soul senseless, and the Lord also senseless. That is the improper treatment for the conditioned soul. Now he has a nice example. The disease condition of the senses may be treated by curing the defects, not by uprooting the senses altogether. That's really a bad way to go. When there's some disease in the eye may be cured to see properly. Plucking out the eye is no treatment. It's an extreme measure to do something for it. So similarly, the whole material disease is based in the process of sense gratification, and liberation from the disease condition is re-engagement of the senses to see the beauty of the Lord and His glorious act on His account. Universal activities, yeah.
He was discussing with a devotee, and he had the opinion that the Mayavadis or the yogis who rigidly follow the school of controlling the senses in the way they do, they much less fall down than devotees who fall down from brahmacharyas and yasa and all that, from renounced. And among them it's not so prominent, rather they fall down and then they start some altruistic activity like opening hospitals and stuff, so this is their fall down. I was not really sure if it's they also have the same problems.
Believe me, they do. Hospitals, nurses, come on. I have met so many people in devotee life who think they can bloop to the mode of goodness. In other words, they'll leave Krishna consciousness and have sense gratification, but on a kind of refined, elevated plane, that it won't, you know, they'll be happy. But it doesn't, I've never seen it work. Unless you happen to have been in the mode of goodness before, which is, you know, you don't see that too much anymore. So then, Brahmaji goes on. Well, it's now a little after 5. We should, before we go to the next verse, it's time to take a break.
You can't trade up on another temple.